It's a day that a lot of us have been waiting for quite some time. If you've been following the case against Brian Koberger, as we have from day one, today is his arraignment. This was something we just learned about like a week ago or so. It was originally supposed to be the preliminary hearing in June, but that is now canceled. A secret grand jury has indicted him on all of the charges of murder and burglary as well. The four accounts of first degree murder and the burglary charges. And today is the day we are going to hear him plead, and probably not a whole lot more. That's the thing everybody's was kind of excited about with the preliminary hearing, is that's almost like a mini trial, if you will.
Yeah.
That's where both sides come out. They throw down what they have against each other, enough anyway to either convince the judge that, yes, this should continue on to trial or whatever should happen. Grand jury has already decided that. So he is going to be going to trial unless, of course, he pleads something, if they offer a plea deal or anything of that nature. He has those options should they be on the table, but I highly doubt that that's going to take place. What we're likely going to see today is a guilty plea. And then after that, there'll be another hearing, probably a week or two or maybe more down the road for scheduling. And then a lot of hearings as they prepare for an actual trial. I'm assuming this gag order is going to stay in place throughout that whole process. And we're probably, other than leaks that come through, I don't expect a lot today, quite honestly, as the hearing takes place. But we'll have coverage of it for you here as it happens. I'm understanding that we're going to have audio as well. This has been something where they keep changing their minds, like last minute, on so many things. So as I say that right now, just don't hold your breath. Whatever we can get for you today on this case, in terms of the audio from the courtroom. We'll, of course, give you the information on what happens regardless, but I hope we have something on all of that.
Tony, what are your thoughts on, do you think, when was this, back in March, that they decided that they could do a firing squad for those who are sentenced to death in Idaho? Do you think that maybe with that sitting on the table, maybe he'll enter a plea of not guilty to spare himself that?
No.
Is that a possibility?
I think he's, I don't see that, quite honestly. I think he's going to take his chance. If he believes he's innocent, which he, that's been the thing. He says he's looking forward to being exonerated, or at least his attorneys have said that. No, I mean, if this is going to go, he's going to give it a shot to try and have freedom if he believes he's innocent, versus putting a guilty plea in, because a guilty plea is going to be life in prison without parole, guaranteed. So,
yeah, that's true. And there's so much evidence, like putting him near the crime scene where he didn't live by them. He had no reason to be there. He wasn't associated with anybody in that area, but they placed him there. So there's so many things pointing at him, and I don't think he stands a chance.
I think there's a lot of things we don't know about yet in this case. Not necessarily that are there to exonerate him, but I think there's a lot more damning evidence in this case that is being held close to the vest at this moment in time that really even pinpoint him there in greater detail. There's been a lot of things that were taken out of his apartment. There was a lot of searching basically of everything that he has, and there has been leaks that have come out, and even just straight up documents that say they found blood over here. They've never been specific enough to say this was his blood, this was a victim's blood, the DNA of it, that has not yet been revealed. But there has been a lot of speculation and a lot of things that he wasn't the perfect criminal by any means. There's likely going to be a treasure trove of stuff in his vehicle that they looked at. You can scrub that stuff as much as you want, but DNA is DNA, blood is blood. It's going to be in there. There's really no way of getting it out of certain materials, short of burning it. So I really think there's going to be a lot more that's going to come in this case that really points the finger at him. I could be wrong, but I really think there's a lot more to come. In terms of what we know thus far, some of the bigger pieces that stand out to me, and I think the biggest one to me is the fact that his phone pings him right in the area of the murders in the middle of the night on that November evening. And
I don't know how you get around that. How do you claim?
And
I mean, phones are accurate. That's just the way they are.
And well, here's what's even more damning about it. It shows him driving into the area, and then suddenly when the crime takes place, he turns his phone off. Oh. And then it suddenly comes back on the radar after the crime has been committed. There isn't a pattern of him turning his phone on and off in his cell phone usage history, except for right there. It would be,
maybe he had that moment of clarity of, oh shit, I didn't turn my phone off.
I think he thought it was going to be a better idea to turn it off because then the phone won't ping him directly at the crime scene, but it pings him leading up to the crime scene and it pings him driving away from the crime scene, not specifically at the crime scene because the phone was turned off. That right there, of all random people, the odds of that are so slim to nothing. I don't know. I mean, the knife sheath with the DNA on it, I know that sounds really interesting and exciting. I don't know that it's as damning as everybody thinks it is. I think that there's a lot of holes that can get poked through in that, because why is it just there? Why is there not DNA in other places? But as I said, I think there is, but I don't think they have revealed that as of yet.
Well, and with how violent those deaths were, it's not like he walked in and strangled people. He allegedly stabbed them. So there's blood everywhere. There's little tiny droplets. There's no way that he could have shielded himself from that unless he was wearing a hazmat suit and then dropped the suit outside of the building. There's no way. I mean, there has to be evidence in his car.
That's one of the bigger mysteries, I think, of this whole case, is how is there not more DNA evidence of him unless he was wearing some sort of a suit? However, the one roommate who does say that she saw him come and go, or go anyway, they had a ski mask on, dressed in black. I'm assuming he took those clothes and, you know, disposed of them very quickly. Burned them or something. But if you get back into a vehicle, there's got to be something with that vehicle. I would really be surprised if there's not much found elsewhere. Again, that's not been reported. It's an interesting mixed bag of people that I've talked to over the last many months on this, specifically talking about the evidence that was presented in the initial document, a probable cause affidavit. Some saying, well, they would put everything there. No, they won't. They'll put just enough there to know that they can get him arrested and that they can get it. They're not going to lay out every single thing they have. Nor do I think they had everything at that moment in time either. They've been gathering.
That's why they have
to
investigate. It's a process. They have to gather evidence. They don't have everything right away.
Exactly. So I think it's going to be very interesting. I think it's a treasure trove of information that they also probably have digitally on his phone that will be laid out. One can only imagine what a stalker, if indeed he was stalking them, would have on their phone of the potential victims. And there's a lot of question as well about an online profile named Papa Roger. And this was a profile that almost seemed to be taunting and sometimes interacting with the community that was diving into this and amateurly investigating it early on. There's a lot of speculation that that was in fact him. He was saying things others did not know at the time. A friend of ours and former FBI agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, we've had her on many times talking about this. In fact, I'm talking with her later in the day about all of this. So this week you'll hear a lot of interesting conversations with her here on the podcast. So be sure to press subscribe to not miss any of that. But it's certainly a crazy case in terms of what what will all be presented. And some of the people that have been very close to the case have said things along the lines of, yeah, this is even crazier than what you think. So I can only imagine where this all goes.
Well, and a word of advice, if you want to commit some sort of serial murder or mass murder, leave your phone at home.
It's usually helpful to do that sort of thing.
Well, if you want to get away with it, if you want to get caught, bring it with you.
Yeah, I completely agree. So we'll have complete coverage for you on that today. That's one of the bigger things on the docket of the week. So be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage on the Idaho 4.
Murder in the morning.
And the case against Brian Koberger. The wheels are in motion. For Stacey, I'm Tony. Stay with us.
From the Hit Killers Podcast, Murder in the Morning.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.